This is Dave Pueblo, and I'm in New York City in a park. I'm not sure which park. And I'm with some of my co-defendants. We were all arrested on Thursday, October 10th, as part of a direct action with Extinction Rebellion, basically locking ourselves to a boat and disrupting Times Square for the sake of drawing attention to the climate crisis and trying to get our government and our people and our whole culture to embrace this. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
Hi, I'm Victoria.
I'm Sophie.
Hey, I'm Vanessa.
What we have in common is that we all went through this process, and because we did something a little bit more dramatic than some of the other people in terms of locking ourselves to this boat, we faced and still face a different level of charge. And we were also in what's known as the tombs overnight. Our total time in jail, I think, was roughly about 32 hours. So I'm wondering if you guys can tell me a little bit what it was like for you as women going through that process.
I mean, I guess you have assumptions going into jail. You have expectations around how dehumanizing it is, how sexist it is, but it doesn't really hit you until you're actually there and with, you know, officers that don't really care about the system, some officers that do. There's a lot of, you know, contradiction through it all. And so I guess for me, it was just kind of confusing and dehumanizing and a lot of layers of just complexity that really I'm still trying to understand and that I probably won't understand just because of how the law system is just so complex and problematic.
I feel like I really underestimated what it would be like on the inside, you know, because I think we were all bracing ourselves for like an early release the next morning, and when we realized that didn't happen, we all kind of, and you know, and we were, and the folks that were in there were really nice. A lot of us had like quarters in our pockets. You know, we really were expecting to be out the next morning. We were giving them out. And then when it came time to like realizing that like, holy shit, it's like 5 o'clock, we're still in here. Some of us had plans for the next day. And realizing like how hard it is to even get change from the officers who are presiding over you. I mean, it's the whole process itself is dehumanizing. And then to come to find out that like a call that I charged on my debit card is $37 for like 7 minutes.
Yeah,
when like we were giving out our quarters to the people that were asking for them because we just didn't think twice. We thought we were going to be out. We thought this was going to be like easy, right? But it's, I think...
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. 37.
It shows you to just kind of, I mean, you know, for most of us, that's a little more accessible to like pay this $30 charge or like, you know, and we're giving out quarters to people who like clearly didn't have quarters or,
who needed to
have contact with people.
Exactly.
And what I found so interesting kind of to your question about like, I mean, I don't know what it was like for the men, but it felt to me like so many, and we know that the justice system is full of people who like just really shouldn't be in jail. Like it's not rehabilitative at all. It's like a lot of people who are sick or having mental health issues or whatever. And it was clear that that was sort of most of what we were hearing, you know, the stories we were hearing in the tombs together. Like there was a woman detoxing from heroin on the floor and like, you know, people who were sick. There was a woman who had like a domestic violence dispute, at least in her story. And there was another woman who came in and was like very pregnant and just like, you know, I don't even know what she like quote unquote did, but why would you put someone who's like so visibly pregnant in there? But at least like the women, you know, there was really this sense of solidarity and you know, I was struck by one woman being like, can we get extra food for the pregnant lady? And just like the stories that we all shared and the connections that we made in there were really, really profound and powerful.
The woman who was pregnant, was she put in the same cell as the person who was detoxing on heroin?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were all in the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in the men's side, basically, I mean, we had different circumstances when we were over at one police plaza. We were all in one giant room. whereas I think you guys were sectioned off into compartments, correct?
At one police plaza, yeah.
Yeah.
And then over at the tombs, were you guys all essentially in bit larger rooms with lots of people?
Well, I think they separated violent charges from nonviolent charges. But that was, right? Is that?
I don't remember,
that's someone,
but
that's
that
what someone
be.
Said. That,
okay. Well, there was someone in there who had a felony for having like a weapon or pulling a weapon. That was.
Was that Jalissa?
So maybe that
no,
wasn't
that was
the case.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that was who. The case specifically. But I remember, like, even later on into the afternoon on that Friday, there was a young woman who was 19 years old who got arrested for having, like, less than a dime bag of marijuana.
Right. Yeah, we were all like,
crazy.
That's not okay.
Right.
That shouldn't
especially
be.
Especially since Mayor de Blasio has made it very clear that you do not get arrested for that anymore in New York City, but well, clearly not.
Unless you're brown or...
Right.
Going back a little bit, in terms of the phone charges and the $37, that really brought into direct perspective all those articles that I'd read over the years in terms of people who were in federal penitentiaries or state penitentiaries, and they're basically, you know, if they want to retain any sort of contact with outside people, they had to pay enormous amounts of money using a phone system that was basically rigged against them.
Right, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing, this I think was what I was most surprised about, and I don't know why I was so surprised about it, but it just, it like, the whole process takes away your agency. There's no way to have any idea of what is happening to you, what the plan is. Like, we kept making calls because we were talking to people on the outside, like our jail support people who we were hoping kind of knew what was happening in the whole court process. But if we hadn't had that contact, we would have no idea. And we still kind of had no idea, but at least we had someone saying, like, you know, they told us you probably won't get on the docket until after 2 p.m., so just hang in there.
Right.
And then by 6 o'clock, we were like, what's going on? We have no idea what's going on. And then still, we didn't get out of the whole process until like 8 or 8:30, I think.
And they were telling us that it could take up to 72 hours to process our paperwork and to get us on the docket. So,
nobody has any information.
Yeah, they really keep you in the dark.
Yeah. So it's just this whole, it's a huge lack of power, I mean, a feeling of powerlessness and a lack of agency in there.
Did any of the people who were in there for other charges, I mean, did you end up talking with them, and how did they react to the fact that you were in there for what you had done?
They thought it was great. I mean, they were like, they were definitely, there was a sense of solidarity there for us kind of putting our bodies on the line for something that we believed in, and then what it seemed as though they kind of they really felt was a real concern for our society. So I think that they were really grateful and thankful, and I think it definitely earned us some credibility, right?
Yeah, which some street cred.
Honestly, like, surprised me, because I thought that people in there for other charges would, like, kind of laugh it off or, like, kind of take us as, like, a joke. So it was really interesting to hear that, like, they thought it was kind of amazing what we were doing.
And one of the corrections officers said, someone's got to protest. I would be out there, too, if I wouldn't lose my job doing this.
Yeah.
About the action itself and the repercussions for you personally, I mean, I know that we're all in this case and, you know, there's a misdemeanor charge and all the other kind of stuff, which in the world of things is a very small price to pay, even if it, tends in that direction. But are you guys going to continue... getting involved in these types of things, and do you have any, like, does this process give you any perspective on, what the proper action might be to try and change our system?
Sophie, you haven't talked at all. Do you want to?
Yeah, I think personally, I need to take a small pause and meditate on the 36 hours that we all went through, but it's completely necessary to get back into flooding the streets and to doing these disruptions for you know, ourselves and for everyone around us. I mean, I think it is completely necessary to continue on and to do larger disruptions and to get more of a screen of this crisis.
The experience itself, if anything, just kind of further, like, fired me up to want to get out there and want to inspire other people to do the same thing, right? I mean, like, what I did, any of us can do. We just have to be willing to, you know, put ourselves out there. And it's not an easy thing. I'm not going to say that it was easy. Being in there, those 32 hours were miserable. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it makes me want to go after the prison system mm-hmm. that much more. Because there was, like, a huge lack of humanity. The only humanity there were the people that were actually in there. And, like, thank God, thank the universe for the fact that the officers that were presiding over us were at the very least, like, pleasant. I mean, that's a way to describe it. And the folks that were in there were just so supportive of each other.